Absolutely. Power is freedom.
And slavery for others, unfortunately.
So, and reference that growing situation. That's a tough one. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Where do you go? A club would be a wonderful thing in this county. As you have said numerous times, Anita, I don't see it in this county. It's too conservative. They're not willing to stand out and take a step forward and speak their piece because they're afraid of political repercussions or legal repercussions, or I don't know what they're afraid of, but they're damn sure afraid.
Well, remember, they had one before. They had two before.
Yeah, and they were cowering in their boots the whole time, hoping that they weren't going to get bad press.
Well, they were there for 7 years, so if the city had wanted to take action against them, they could have, and they waited until the feds took action.
They knew that they were going to destroy themselves. They saw it. They heard rumors about it. They knew years before it ever ended that it was going to end.
Well, but it went on for 7 years. What I'm saying is it can happen again.
But what are you saying went on for 7 years, Robert? The club that was on Maple Street only was in operation, I believe, for about 2 years.
There you go.
They self-destructed, and then the club that opened on Seabright Avenue never had a chance. I don't think the city ever intended to let that club operate and function, whether it was close to a school. After all, when they told them they had to move, they did find another location up on Soquel Avenue, and then all of a sudden the Auto Row operators up there didn't want them there. It's just a bunch of bullshit.
Right, the Barrios Unidos, Michael Hernandez
story. Oh, the little school
story.
There, right.
Yeah, they quickly discovered a new school.
The fact is that money talks. When it gets right down to the bottom line, money talks, and the rest of us can walk.
Well, I think if the rest of us walk down to city council, we can do some talking of our own, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
But it is true, money does talk, and that's why up in Oakland they're talking about taxing and regulating it.
There you go. I think that's an exceptionally good thing because it's a step in a positive direction. That means that it's being legitimized in the eyes of the people who we elect, and that's a good thing. The more politicians that buy in and chime into that, I think the better.
And the politician's number again is 420-5020. And for those who want to, by the way, who are interested in an organization, I don't want to flood Anita's lines with this, but if people think they want to hook up with Anita and Andrea and others who want to see an independent organization, I'm going to give out the Huffline number, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for those who want to leave their name and number, and I'll pass that on to Anita. And the Huff number is easy to remember. It's 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And Anita's actually, yes, indicating that you can also call the MedX number?
Yes, they can.
Okay, so actually, why don't you do that? Don't call the Huff line. Call Anita directly. She can talk to you, 425-3444, unless you want to talk to me, in which case, please do give a call if you got any questions about the show.
In reference to alliances and forums and all that, there are people out there that will talk about and in rhetoric form talk about getting together, but in reality they don't really want to get together with anybody because they're in a position of either land ownership and power, or they're the golden child, and I won't name names of organizations or people, but you know who I'm talking about.
I do. Caller, let me roll here. Is there more you want to say on this issue?
Nothing at all.
Hey, no, appreciate your calling in and sharing this stuff with us.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Lines are open, 427-3772. If you want to join a new organization, which Anita is announcing a mass rally for, it's 425-3444. That's MedX. You'll get an answering machine, but a very attentive answering machine. So do give a call. 425-3444 is Anita's number. My off-air number, in case you want to leave me a number, is 423-HUFF. And that Mike Rotkin City Council number, oh boy, 420-5020. Meanwhile, the studio number, I hope you got your pencil here, is 427-FRSC, 427-3772. And I think what I'm going to do now, while I'm waiting for the next flood of phone calls to come in, is finish up an interview that I was playing from last week. It was actually, it might have even been on Thursday that I played some of this interview. Andrea Pritchard of Berkeley Cop Watch. I think it was last week. We had Tom Beloit in here. He's starting a Santa Cruz Cop Watch, and that's going to be happening at a meeting in April. He's going to be showing the Berkeley Cop Watch video. How do you do it? What's involved? People are invited. If you want more information on that, you can come to his video showing, which is going to be, you can check that out on Indie Media, on the Indie Media website. I'm checking it out right now and trying to find you the exact time as we wait for our endlessly slow computer to do its thing. Come on, computer. Very slow. Anyway, go to the Indie Media website to find out. It's early April for the Cop Watch video showing for www.santacruz.indymedia, Santa Cruz, one word, small letters, .indymedia.org. And that at that discussion that Tom and I had last week, I had an interview with Andrea by phone about Berkeley Cop Watch, and we also interviewed her when I was up at the peace rally, the anti-war rally in San Francisco about a week ago. Still have a war going on out there, folks. Let's not forget, that's your money and your name that they're doing it in, killing and killing and dying, all for all the fun imperialism that more than you can handle. She spoke, Andrea Pritchard did, that's the Berkeley Cop Watch woman, about issues around, they were trying to get police dogs in Berkeley, and we found out that the Berkeley Police Review Commission, as well as a number of other boards, has said, no, we don't need no stinking police dogs, thank you very much. I mean, they already have an option. If they need police dogs in any particular case, they can ask the Oakland police dogs to come in. They have inter-police agency sharing and, yeah, that sort of thing. But they don't want to spend more money on their own German Shepherd dog. You know, a very nice, friendly German. You remember the German Shepherd dog that Officer Brandt used to walk around the mall with, walking up and down with his German Shepherd dog. I would make some, critical comments of Officer. He insisted his dog was not a dog, but was a fellow officer. Officer Fido or Officer Ralph, or whatever the dog's name was. There was Igor. Was it Igor?
Biter.
There was the dog that that cornered Machado in 1991 at the Shell station, the Chevron station, near the county building where he was shot dead by many police officers. And I think the police dog was injured, turned out, by police department bullets. In any case, the Berkeley Police Review Commission has voted against the police dogs. Here's some more of Andrea Pritchard talking about Berkeley, the plight of the poor up there, police department. I don't think she goes into medical marijuana, but we will talk to you about medical marijuana more. I think Anita is stuck on the station. We might even convince her to get her own show here. Wouldn't that be cool? Have Anita Henry talk to you more regularly on not just medical marijuana, but women's issues and other medical issues of different kinds.
All kinds of things going on, Robert. People have all kinds of maladies and all kinds of things they want to talk
about.
Sexual
dysfunctions, perhaps?
Have you watched television lately?
I don't watch television. But here, well, let's hear what Andrea is saying, and we'll talk about this privately.
Well, as you can throw them, I welcome you to throw them. Wait a minute. I used to be very famous as a newspaper reader, I remember. You know the funny thing about Tom Bates?
And just to clarify, Tom Bates is the mayor of Berkeley, and this is Andrea Pritchard talking about Mayor Tom Bates. Here down in Santa Cruz, we have Mayor Scott Arrest the Homeless Kennedy. Up in Berkeley, it's Mayor Tom I Stole the Newspapers Bates. You may remember he's famous for stealing all the papers with a critical opinion, the Student Daily Cal. I guess it was November before last, or was it last November? I guess it must have been November 2004. 2002 must have been. Was it three? Last year.
He was dinged in this past election for stealing newspapers and throwing them away. What a lot of people forget is back when Lonnie Hancock was running for mayor. His wife, Lonnie Hancock, some years ago, about 10 years ago. I remember this. He was also cited for climbing up, I think it was a telephone pole, and taking down the signs of the opposition. So I remember his justification. He said, I was in a state of fatigue and disorientation, and I don't know why I threw away those newspapers. But it's a well-worn track with this guy that he just cannot deal with opposition, and so he just sort of tries to snuff it out or silence it.
Talk to Tom about your concerns.
I addressed the city council, and I was kind of stunned because, well, during the public comment period where you only have 3 quick minutes to make your comments, the mayor felt perfectly comfortable interrupting at any point that his little mind felt an impulse to break in on what I was trying to say, and I asked him to please stop doing that. And he also tried to justify the expenditure, saying, Well, the money for the dog proposal comes from asset forfeiture funds that the police have gained, and it can only be used on equipment. But any policy wonk can figure out how to reduce the police budget in so much as, you know, $60,000. If the cops don't need that money, if all they can think of to spend it on is something we don't need, then let's cut their budget in some other area and free that money up for things that we really do need.
In Santa Cruz, we have the same situation as city council. Turning to the point you make that you were attempting to bring your concerns to the community, the mayor interrupted you, which is a violation of the Brown Act. You should be allowed to speak uninterrupted, assuming you're not disrupting a meeting, because you have a right to do so under state law. Has that ever happened before with other mayors? Has that happened frequently in Berkeley?
No, actually, I mean, my experience has been, I mean, Shirley Dean, love her or leave her, whatever, but at least she was able to run a public meeting with a certain degree of decorum and attention to process. I didn't agree with her positions often, but I was surprised that this so-called moderate Tom Bates...
Liberal, please.
Moderate, liberal, progressive, you know a tree by its fruit, really. That he's just really disrespectful.
Oakland and San Francisco, they have dogs and they use them. What about Richmond, other areas?
I'm not aware. I know Oakland has, they're saying that Berkeley is one of the only major police departments that doesn't have a canine unit, but I think that's kind of tragic, really. And I'm sorry to see Berkeley go the same way as, you know, what are we trying to emulate, Miami? I mean, and basically that's where the biggest studies of these dogs have been done. And it shows that the find and bite, you know, Tom Bates, you know, it's a kinder, gentler fascism. What we've got is the find and bark method as opposed to the find and bite. So they say, oh, these dogs will just find you and bark at you. No, these dogs will find you, will be deployed in a wider variety of situations because the myth is that these dogs will just find you and bark. But these dogs are also, sometimes, in one of the studies I read, the dogs will sometimes bump the suspect in order to get them to move so that they can, according to their training.
A helpful nudge.
A helpful nudge. And so they can sink their teeth into you and be perfectly justified in doing so according to their training.
Maybe you need to get some dog lovers involved too. I don't know.
Well, you know what, Robert, is that the dog lovers have turned out. The Humane Commission has said this is disgusting for two reasons. One, the training that goes into these attack dogs is very inhumane. Not to mention the electric shocks, but especially for the bite and hold dogs. The dogs are trained not to they're trained to bite, sink their teeth in, and hold on. And the way that they train the dogs to do that is by putting an enormous bungee cord on their collar. So if the dog lets go, they go flying backwards through space into a very painful collision. So that's how the dogs are trained. But the Humane Commission is also concerned because dogs, you know, that's slave catcher material. Not only is it like repression of demonstrations, but in the African-American community, they still know that white people still train their dogs to be on the lookout for people of color. You know, like a dog, when it's trained, it responds a lot to the way its master perceives people. So sort of like racism is kind of translated to the dog. So if a white person is walking down the street with their dog and the white person is tripped out when they meet a person of color, the dog will start to be tripped out. So a lot of African-American kids are scared of dogs. They've had bad encounters with dogs. And the Humane Commission was noticing that if dogs are utilized throughout the city, what it's going to do is continue to poison that relationship. You know, dogs should be loving kids, and kids should be loving dogs. And so it poisons that relationship, and it means that there's lots of unwanted pets in the animal shelters. Why? Because, you know, a large segment of the population is scared of dogs. So this perpetuates that. So the Humane Commission voted unequivocally against it. The Homeless Commission voted to send a communication to the mayor saying they were very concerned about it, and that they wanted the mayor to study its impact on homeless people, because a lot of the provisions of the proposal really speak to the possibility that homeless people would be directly impacted.
What about the Peace and Justice Commission? Are they...
I don't know about the Peace and Justice Commission. We have made some contacts in the disability community, and so hopefully they're going to be convening their commission and speaking out on that as well.
People's Park, anything happening there?
People's Park anniversary coming up, April 25th.
Currently controlled by the university, the city.
You know, a lot of people claim to control it, but...
Or is it the people who control it?
Well, as far as I can tell, I think the people still have it. I mean, it's hard times all around, you know. It's hard times to, you know, empower the people there. I mean, it's such a wonderful refuge and such a wonderful, you know, cultural icon. The park is just so available. And it needs more love, and it needs to be used more, and it needs, you know, when we that park is like a metaphor. A park is like our weary, trampled heart that needs more love and attention. And so the people who gather in People's Park represent, you know, the fringe marginal elements of Berkeley. And so if you want to save the park, you can't do that without loving and offering a hand to the people.
Sleeping ban in Berkeley got the lowest priority after protests 2 years ago. 647J, the state anti-lodging law, was, after some pressure by various homeless groups, supposedly made the lowest priority for city police enforcement. Has this had any effect on homeless people busted for sleeping in Berkeley?
I don't think it's had any discernible effect, because if you don't bust them for lodging, police officers are very skilled at finding any other, ordinance or municipal code to enforce. Instead of that, they could call it a trespass. They could call it, some other kind of violation. And I think they have. I don't think homeless people have gotten any relief. And that's the problem when you tinker with the mechanisms of reform. You know, you can say don't enforce this state ordinance, the state code 647J. So they'll fall back on their municipal codes, or they'll, you know, do a lateral over to some other trespassing thing. The political will to deal humanely with the homeless people does not exist in Berkeley. And until, you know, we're able to link the struggle of homeless people and poor people and this whole assault on the quality of our living, you know, we have to make it. I mean, I think we have to do a whole lot more than just tinker with their ordinances. They're writing the laws, and they enforce them as they will.
Rent control?
What about, I mean...
What's happening in Berkeley with rent control? Anything?
I mean, we're all on the ropes. I mean, Berkeley is experiencing a huge gentrification. The university has unleashed another long-range development plan, which continues to gobble up more what they call opportunity sites, which would otherwise be retail... you know, reach commercial space that would generate revenue for the city. The university acquires those properties. The university, because it is a research and development facility for the federal government, is able to bring in high-paid professionals, you know, graduate students, blah, 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 blah. There is no manufacturing base in Berkeley. There's no job opportunities for our young people. And there is flight. Poor people are leaving Berkeley. The African-American population continues to decrease in Berkeley because people are saying they can't keep up with the cost of living. They can't keep up. And, you know, the real estate there is just out of sight. So Berkeley's looking more and more like a Moraga, or more and more like some kind of high, you know, high-end living place.
Like Santa Cruz, Brett.
Yeah, I know, man. It's happening.
War on drugs, war on terrorists. What's happening in Berkeley with these battle cries of the right?
Well, you know, I think it's really telling what just happened in Oakland with the nuisance ordinance. I don't know if you've heard about that.
Update us.
Well, this week, the city council passed an ordinance which allows the city to evict tenants now. So the landlord could be all in your corner and say, no, you're a wonderful tenant. But if the city decides that you have been suspected of dealing drugs or are a drug dealer, then they can't begin eviction proceedings against you. And what this totally circumvents is due process. You know, if you're a convicted drug dealer, okay, then you go and you serve your time, you pay your punishment, whatever. But these are quasi-judicial processes that deprive people of their home. And I'm afraid that Berkeley, because the pressure is so intense, and we've seen little gentrification, you know, little tactics like this, where the police help to organize little neighborhood associations to do small claim suits en masse against, you know, in the case I'm directly thinking of it, an elderly woman who was never convicted of drug dealing, never even associated with it, but they sort of pinned all the drug activity in her neighborhood because it happened near her property. they pinned it on her. There's such a low standard of evidence in small claims court that basically the judge, even though she, you know, she knew that the woman had nothing to do with drug dealing, she said, well, I'm sorry, but I'm finding for the plaintiff 200, you know, it was 50 people with $5,000 apiece small claim suits. So this old lady who had faithfully served the community of Berkeley now suddenly had to deal with $250,000 in liability, and not because of any criminal wrongdoing.
And of course, the most immediate issue to us here today, the war in Iraq. Berkeley, of course, is often seen as a center of anti-war activity. Is it these days?
I wouldn't say that Berkeley is the center. I think that the university used to play a large role in that, the, you know, the students and so forth. You know, and for a lot of reasons, the student population is not highly mobilized against the war. I think because a lot of people see themselves as part of the system that benefits from these wars. Likewise, you know, and so Berkeley, the city of Berkeley, is very different from the university. The city of Berkeley, I think, is, you know, liberal to progressive. And I think a lot of organizers from Berkeley go to Oakland, go to San Francisco and help out. But it hasn't been a center of anti-war organizing that I can see.
Any other issues you wish to comment on?
Well, I mean, what Cop Watch is doing right now is we're having a period where a lot of people are interested in getting involved because they've seen that, you know, the lawsuits that related to April 7th in Oakland, for example. There was no investigation of the port.
April 7th in Oakland was?
It was sort of the port massacre. It's when the Oakland police just went wild on people who were trying to have a community picket. And they used concussion grenades, they used rubber bullets, they used pepper spray. They just unleashed their whole arsenal on nonviolent protesters. The city council was powerless to enact any kind of investigation. There's been no reprimand of anybody for those days' activities.
The Oakland Police Commission did nothing.
Absolutely nothing. The Office of Citizen Complaints is in looking at individual, you know, complaints. But the point is, did the Oakland Police Department conspire with CADIC, the California Anti-Terrorism Information Center, to regard these demonstrators as terrorists, basically? Nothing happened there. In Berkeley, the Police Review Commission, they're on the ropes. There was a shooting last July. An African-American man, 28-year-old Glenel Givens, was shot and killed because he was a suspect in a robbery. But the fact is that the police have given no account. The officers, two Oakland officers and one Berkeley officer who shot that man to death, have not given a statement about what happened. And the police department is not requiring that they do so. And the Police Review Commission is trying to get the police department to say, look, we need to investigate this. Police department completely uncooperative. So the PRC is going to be faced with whether or not to issue a subpoena. A lot of people have looked at Berkeley as like the model Police Review Commission. Well, here's where the rubber meets the road. If you issue a subpoena, you have to be able to execute it. You have to be able to get them to comply. And so you're going to have to hire a lot of legal help. And ultimately, you know, if the police department fails to comply with the subpoena, who goes to jail? Who's going to, it's a real power struggle. And the stakes are very high because if the PRC is revealed that they can't even get the police department
to... Have they ever issued a subpoena before?
Never have. They came close once, but they've never done it. So this is really going to, you know, turn them out. It's going to show them that either you're just a paper tiger like the rest of them, or you're willing to commit. And that's what we really got to rally the citizens of Berkeley towards, is to fight for civilian review, but it's become so weak that people kind of despise it. But they don't understand that it's weak because of neglect.
ACLU has gotten a lot more members given the Patriot Act and so forth. Has your organization, Cop Watch, also grown as a consequence?
Yeah, we're actually having a lot more members. But again, I think that's because people are looking, they want to, you know, take the struggle to the streets. You know, because lawsuits don't do anything. Filing complaints doesn't do anything. Going to the city council doesn't do anything. So we've got to meet the police in the streets where they're doing the misconduct, and we've got to document and we've got to tell them, no, you can't do this in our neighborhood.
Cop Watch has grown in other cities, as far as you know.
Well, if folks want to come and check out our video, there's a very thriving Cop Watch movement in the Over the Rhine neighborhood in Cincinnati. After the April 7th, 2001 slaying of Timothy Thomas, when those Cincinnati riots broke out, people organize themselves, and they're starting all kinds of stuff. A hip-hop youth center and regular patrols. Denver Cop Watch is also doing very well. They exposed a whole surveillance scandal by the local police about surveillance of activists and so forth. So they're...
Also in California.
Other cop watches in California. There's various efforts. East Palo Alto, we're doing shifts in East Palo Alto. We're trying to get it together in Oakland, trying to work with some of the local groups there to begin to get shifts going out. There's a lot more receptivity to it, I think, now that people are seeing that it really, we're in a war. We're in a war. And that war is happening in Palestine, that war is happening in Iraq, and that war is happening on our streets. And we can't just rest on the privilege of being within these borders to try to say that we're not in a war, because the police, they understand what time it is, and they're dealing with our communities accordingly.
How can people get more information, Andrea, about Berkeley Cop Watch?
People can check us out on the web. We're at www.berkeleycopwatch.org. You can also call us, 510-548-0425.
Thank you, Andrea Pritchard of Berkeley Cop Watch. On Berkeley Cop Watch for how many years now?
It came up on 14 without my notice.
I remember 1990, you showed up at the summer in Santa Cruz and gave a lecture.
Yeah, a blink of an eye, Robert. It's just a blink of an eye, and here we are.
You're here. Thanks, Andrea.
And you're tuned to Free Radio, 96.3 FM and 101.1 FM. This is the extended version of Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. I am the Robe, Robert Norris. That was Andrea Pritchard talking a week and a half ago, actually a week and a day ago, in Berkeley in San Francisco at the Civic Center, talking about Berkeley, Berkeley Cop Watch, Berkeley politics. A great source of information. More important, a strong and unrelenting activist around issues that concern poor and homeless people. And that's why she started Cop Watch, to deal with homeless abuses. Good for her. We have a Cop Watch coming up here in Santa Cruz, as mentioned, and you can find out more about it by attending the video showing. And I'm still looking to find the exact time of that video showing. It's in April, and again, go to the Indie Media website, a website I recommend, as well as the Huff website. Huff is still... a little bit behind the times in the articles, but you can still learn a lot if you haven't been following everything we've been talking about here on Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides by going to the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org. And it's all one word, huffsantacruz.org, all small letters. Check it out. You can also come join the Huff email list if you want to catch what's going on there. And that's... information on how to do that, go to the Huff website or give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Huff meets every week, 8:30 in the morning, Baker Square, 1107 Ocean Street. 1107 Ocean, that's halfway between Denny's and the Santa Cruz Diner. It's a pie shop across from, I guess it's Beach Street Gas, something like that. So, looks like Anthony Robinson, the public defender who promised to be here on the air, isn't here. And unfortunately, I've seen this kind of no-show stuff happening with him, Charlie Stevens, and it's unfortunate. I am hoping to have an interview with Bob Lee middle of next week, which I'm going to ask him about the issue that looks like Scott Kennedy and I may agree on. What a concept. And that issue, boy, this computer is giving me problems. Get rid of that screen. This issue has to do with a protest. Actually, I'll talk about that as soon as I get it online. Time for a musical break when all else fails.
All right then, fuck it. it stays away. I can still hear them say it's a game, but don't forget your name, all that you came with, obligations to live just like your father did. I don't know how long I've been here for, but now that I've seen it, I'll always come back for more. I don't know how old we gotta grow before I'm allowed to see a soul. Why do birds cry to me? Why can't birds fly, you see? I miss the old days, but I had to walk away. I miss the old days, but I had to walk away. They'll still remember to say it's a game, and I'm sure to forget your name, and that you came with here, obligations, and I can't tell what side you're showing me. I don't know if you've been here before. Once they see it, they'll always come back for more. I don't know how old we gotta grow. All I know about you is what I've been told. Why do birds cry to me? Why can't birds? You see, I miss the old days, but I had to walk away. I miss the old days, but I had to walk away.
And that was Danielle Savage, one of our own street performers, or at least she's been here on the streets, showed up at the SAFE event, a couple of them anyway, or at least one of them. SAFE event number 9 is coming up. That's Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. That's every Wednesday night in front of New Leaf Market on Pacific Avenue, downtown Santa Cruz. Street performers reclaiming the streets, and particularly relevant as Steve argues and Tony Bowl, his attorney's victory in the move-along law. We have a call. Let's see what's cooking. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is Paul Marcelin Simpson.
Hey, Paul. What's the good word from the Metro Writers Union?
All bad news in that area, but I wanted to focus on some other things first, if we have a moment.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you about the status of the constitutional question with the move-along law. I haven't seen reports in the mainstream media about the law, and I'd like to know, now that it's been found to be not constitutional, you know, what happens next? And...
Yeah, the there was a reporter in the corridors of the courtroom, the halls of justice, where the only justice is in the halls, as they say. That was last, I guess, Friday before last now, I guess it is. And I've actually written an article. I've helped to write an article. Becky Johnson is the main writer for Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper, on this issue. should be coming out in a couple of days, and it's also online, posted on the Indie Media website, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org, which I can't seem to get on this computer for some reason, but it usually comes up pretty easily. What happened there, as I may have mentioned in a previous show, is that the Honorable Judge Barton, who I call Barracuda Barton, decided or indicated that his final decision on the move-along law was going to be, in constitutional arguments that were made prior to trial, there was no trial yet, but attorney Tony Bull, speaking for Steve Argue, or on behalf of Steve Argue, argued that non-commercial tabling, such as Steve Argue was doing, he was distributing leaflets at a table in front of the Pacific Trading Company last late June and early July.
Shame on him.
Yeah, he was urging the boycott of the Pacific Trading Company because of their involvement in setting up the, spending $7,000 of taxpayer money plus, more than $7,000, between $7,000 and $12,000, to move the railing of a fence on a planter, a railing on a planter, so that homeless people or musicians, older people, anybody, could no longer sit there legally. And that's in front of the Costa Brava Pacific Trading area at Walnut Street on Pacific Avenue. This was done without a city council vote, without any public hearings or discussion. It was simply done through the staff, through Assistant City Manager Martine Bernal, through pressuring by the Pacific Trading Company. And Steve Argue and others, many of us actually, were out there petitioning at this table, urging people to boycott the store, to sign petitions, not expressing our outrage. And there were even some voter registration petitions around, I think, on a number of these occasions. And the store owners took some precautions to videotape us. They called the police on us repeatedly. The police kind of hung out in Pacific Trading Company. And the police very ostentatiously surveilled us for hours on end, standing near the table. Steve Argue was arrested for not moving the table after being told it had been there for an hour. That's part of the Rotkin, Matthews, Porter, to name the three most prominent city council members, but it was passed unanimously in January 2003. It was called the Move-Along Law, and the Move-Along Law states in essence that whenever you have a so-called display device, which police have very liberally interpreted to indicate anything, including a cloth or a cap or a table, anything which can contain or hold objects, which is sitting on public property, is a display device, and if you are sitting there with your display device, you can't be there for more than an hour, at which point you have to move at least 100 feet away, and you have to do it and not come back for 24 hours with the same display device, which, of course, makes, for example, a boycott of a particular business very difficult to do. It makes it onerous. In theory, you can send in somebody else with a new display device, or you can come back with a new display device yourself. So what we did was we acquired a sort of series of tables. When they took away one table, we set up an ironing board. You know?
Oh.
So we kind of used a variety of tactics, and the police made idiots of themselves by, there were 8 or 9 police officers at one point, 5 squad cars lined up on the avenue. Argue was first taken to a magistrate. He insisted on being taken to a magistrate, and to be determined if the charges against him were valid. The magistrate said, I think it was, what's her name, Judge Akau, I believe. She said, set it for arraignment. And he was, unlike Tom Noddy, who was jailed because he asked to be taken to a magistrate, and he was willing to sign he wasn't willing to sign the citation, but he was willing to appear at a court date. I think Argue was let off with a court date. The second time, I believe he was jailed. I could have that wrong, and if Steve is listening, he can correct that. But in any case, he was essentially taken into police custody twice on this issue. And then the second time, Matthew Hartog set up a second table after Steve was arrested, and he was actually dragged to the police car. He lay down on the sidewalk and refused to move because he felt there was a serious constitutional issue here, which there is, and there was. And anyway, the case, initially charged as a misdemeanor, was reduced to an infraction so that misdemeanors are more serious crimes than infractions. Infractions don't require a jury trial, and they don't require the state to appoint a public defender. And so Argue got a volunteer lawyer, Tony Bull, who I've discussed on the air before. He May has very reasonable rates, but he insists on complete control over cases. And that's made... I've actually talked about attorneys and problems activists have with attorneys, but Tony found a good argument in the case of this move-along law. His argument, which apparently appealed to Barton, or Barton could not avoid, was the argument that commercial displays, to wit, merchants putting out their dresses and shirts and other knickknacks on the sidewalk, can get a permit to stay for longer than an hour. They also, incidentally, can get a permit to put their tables wherever they want. They don't have to be 10 feet from a building, 10 feet from a crosswalk, 10 feet from a kiosk, 10 feet from a bench, 10 feet from a phone, and so forth, which are the requirements for non-commercial displays. So, interestingly enough, that would also be, one would think, unconstitutional, but Barton, strangely enough, did not, made an opposite ruling in that case, perhaps because the constitutional arguments were not presented explicitly. That was the case of Moo the flautist, the flute player, who argued that it was unreasonable for him to be told to, and he could only have his little flute case open 10 feet away from a building when it was very, very windy and cold, or when the sun was beating down and he went behind next to an abandoned or closed building. Why would the castle in there? And Officer Bechtel, Pam Bechtel, was ready with her ticket book anyway, as these police officers seem to be. Anyway, this is a rather long and elaborate explanation. Sorry about that, Paul. The upshot of it was Barton ruled that the rules regarding commercial and non-commercial displays are discriminatory against non-commercial displays because there's no permit process. Hence, the non-commercial display person is penalized. The city attorney made some rather absurd arguments like, well, Steve argued could sell something on the table and then go get a commercial display permit. You know? And she made other arguments, made them so soft, in a voice so soft in court that I couldn't hear. And to my shame, I did not stand up and say, Your Honor, we're in the audience. We cannot hear you. Please request that they speak up, which is a fair thing to ask. This is supposed to be a public trial. Thank you very much. Or a public hearing, but I didn't do that, so maybe next time I will. And Barton announced he would make a written opinion on this matter on April 2nd. That's this coming Friday, 8:30 a.m.
Where can we get a copy of the written opinion when it comes out?
It'll probably be in the file in the court building.
Okay.
And I would hope that Deadhead Dan White would get his sorry reportorial ass down to court and report on this issue. Perhaps he will. He did a story which some people found fairly good. I found it had its good points and its bad points around the dumpster situation where homeless people were almost killed, four of them in a dumpster, and Mike Rutkin's response was, look how stupid they
are. Yes, I remember.
And, you know, and to his credit, he actually mentioned, he went to Ken Cole, who, to his credit, talked about there were survival, you know, it was a survival necessity because shelters were full. Anyway, getting back to the move-along law, the police have not been enforcing the move-along law against political tablers other than against Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and that only until Steve Argue and Matthew Hartog were arrested. Thereafter, they stopped enforcing it. I think they got kind of embarrassed. They also enforced it against the vigil against two wars. The tabling went on for 7 days, day and night, outside O'Neill's on the occasion of the right before the Iraqi invasion, an attempt to stop the Iraqi invasion. It looks like everybody's all happy now. They've all gone home, and you know, we can all be happy, even though people are being shot in greater numbers over the year, even after the Fuhrer has declared peace in Iraq, or you know, we're victory, you know. The Iraqi resistance is, as Bush would put it, bringing it on.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two candidates, one of whom, Kerry, wants to send more troops and train more police. It's supposed to have a different policy than Bush's because people are all freaked out. Anybody but Bush has got to be better. Well, look at the statements. Anyway, those are the two times in which the tables were, move-along law was enforced against political tablers. But it is frequently enforced against poor people sitting with a sign that says, spare change. That's considered to be a display device, even though it isn't, really. And people are harassed for it, told to move along every hour.
And I assume people who don't have the money to pay any fines or to mount a proper legal defense, so to some extent it's just plain harassment.
Well, they don't. Usually people don't want to take tickets, particularly street performers who are also getting hassled under the move along law. they haven't got the, they're afraid their instrument might be confiscated. They don't want to, the $162 ticket, these people are on the edge anyway, would down them. They don't stay to deal with it. There are rare exceptions. Eli, the burrito man, you may notice him, an African-American fellow sings about a burrito in a tidy voice. He's on, often across from the Cooper House on the other side of the street by the Rittenhouse fence. He took a Bechtel to court and won a case, not on constitutional grounds, because Bechtel is sloppy in writing her tickets. But that's the situation. The written opinion will come out on April 2nd and 8:30 a.m. in Department 2. You can find it by going to the Superior Court clerk in the first floor of the county building and asking for Steve Argue's file and getting a copy. It'll probably cost you 50 cents a page. I'm hoping we can get a copy and print it on the Indie Media website.
Yeah, no, I would love to help out with the publication of it. I can scan it if you'd like.
The fear that some of us have is, A, that the city may appeal, which we don't know what they're going to do on that one, and or the concern that the city may institute a bogus permit process for non-commercial events and require people to go get a permit and pay for one to have a political table or a little cap in front of you with a, you know, I mean, I can't see how they would get away with that one in our political climate, but I couldn't see how they could get away with the downtown ordinances in 1994 and making them worse in 2002. And apparently the bourgeois electorate will stand for anything at this time because they're either preoccupied with other things or that's the main thing. I think people are working two jobs to pay their rent. So,
yeah, well, the bourgeois, the notion of the bourgeois electorate. Small apartment building that would have been built at High and Cardiff Street, or High and Cardiff Place by UCSC, and would have had 42 studios, which were the, by definition, the affordable units. They were meant for single people, and I suppose potentially a single parent with a child, but particularly for single people, they were to have been very small, and so by definition, affordable, and then four one-bedroom units as well. And it was a case of complete capitulation to a group of, a very homogeneous group of neighborhood homeowners who opposed the, who opposed affordable housing, frankly. And they made that very, very clear. You know, some of them were a little more sophisticated and tried to be tactful, but many of them came out against tenants in general, and particularly against young people, students, young workers, et cetera. And they said that we drink, and I'm not a student, but I'm a young working person, said that we drink and that we carry on and party into, you know, late at night, and that we create a disturbance in our neighborhoods. And many of us in the audience really resented that. And then the others were a little more tactful, and they tried to couch it in terms of wanting more families in their neighborhood. And no one could answer the question of, you know, whether families can afford a $500,000 single-family home or a $2,000 townhouse apartment or something like that. And then Council Member Porter surprisingly asked point blank to several of these opponents, who said that they were willing to compromise, would a compromise include any studio units? And they all said no.
So no compromise, huh?
No compromise. And excuse me, as is typical for our city council, they took the whole project and they redesigned it, and it's a private development project. The city isn't paying for it or contributing to it in any way, so they took it upon themselves to redesign it. The developer had complied with most of the zoning laws and needed a minor variance over, he wanted to build units that were 20 square feet larger than the guidelines suggested, 345 square feet on average instead of 325 square feet. That seems to me not very different. But the city council took it upon itself to redesign the project, and you know, there was no notion of whether anyone would be interested in building it anymore. So we've got an empty lot, and the developer, if he wants to pursue it, has to redesign it and resubmit. So empty lot.
And the how many, what was the size of the opposition? I understand there were 300 people at council. So one person told me some huge number of people. That
The room was full. I had never seen it so full. Both aisles full. The back was full. There was a line about the door. I didn't count the number of speakers, but the public testimony lasted over 2 hours, for sure. And I would say that the opponents and the supporters were even in number. Those attending the meeting, of course. We only hear from. It seemed that the only opponents were the neighborhood homeowners, and that the potential range of supporters would cover the entire city. I mean, we heard UCSC students testifying. We heard people who work for the Slug Books textbook buying cooperative who have a commercial space near this project and who are very excited about it, speaking in support. We heard a city employee. We heard a tremendous diversity of people.
And this was all pretty much the one item which took up 4 hours.
Yes, they decided after midnight to eliminate the rest of the agenda. Before this meeting, from about 7 to 8, they had a send off, a farewell event for some school children who are going on our behalf to the sister city in Shingu, Japan. So there was a long process whereby the students were recognized individually about 3 times, and the parents and the other people. It was very nice, and it's very important to recognize young people, but it was perhaps overdone. It took a whole hour, and then they dealt with this issue from 8 to midnight.
Did you talk to any of the neighbors, or did you talk to the different groups? Did you get any sense of the aftermath of all this? Were people who were disappointed in the vote pretty much of your mind?
I did. Things disintegrated very quickly because, you know, not everyone stayed till midnight, so I didn't talk with any of the supporters right after the meeting. But I had talked with supporters in particular, and I mean supporters on all levels. The building that I live in, the Chestnut Street Apartments, happens to have been developed by the same person who was filing that application.
Who's the developer?
This is Maynard Manson. And, you know, say what you will about private developers, they do have to say that I am very happy with the space that I have here as far as apartments go, and it's well-designed, and it's safe, and it, you know, it has benefits to it that I think other tenants deserve and should have access to. So that was one of the reasons I supported it. But, you know, I talked to supporters in all positions, students and other folks, too. I see housing and particularly moderately priced housing to be a crucial issue here. If we ever want to turn this city around, if we want it to have a viable economy, if we want to retain people here.
You're running for city council?
No, I said I was considering it, but I realized, and I, you know, it's something that I need to talk to more people about. But I realized at that meeting that it would really be impossible for me to do that because you can't get elected unless you go with the West Side homeowners, the not in my backyard forces, the people who were present in this case, not West Side, but I don't know what you would call that neighborhood, but the Bay and High Street area across from the university. Unless you side with them, you're not going to be elected here. So the points that I made when I testified probably disqualify me from a successful or eliminate my chances of a successful campaign in the city.
There may be a split there. I know that Kennedy and Rotkin are probably going to be pushing for these developments of industrial developments on the West Side, which I suspect the owners are not too excited about.
Yeah, but you know, you can push for something. Rotkin, this is one thing I saw about Rotkin. I'll be posting a detailed article with quotes and information about the meeting on Indie Media. I hope this afternoon. I've been working on it since Wednesday. But Rotkin is an equivocator. And he will say he spent more than 15 minutes. He was the first person to speak after the public testified. And, you know, for the first 15 minutes of the talk, you couldn't tell whether he supported or opposed the development. He speaks to both sides of the issue and then picks the expedient position when he has to, when he's called on it. So, you know, they can say they support changes in the West Side, whether we support them or not, but they can say one thing, and they can still delay the process and talk about it and complain about it and redesign and carry on and not accomplish anything. So it doesn't, it's not a very strong, they're not taking a very strong position in the city. We know that any change takes, you know, 3-4 years to go through when it comes to development. So I don't see that as a break with past practice.
I know Rotkin and Kennedy were kind of considered to be the Canfield, the boardwalk company development people who pushed the Beach South of Laurel plan, pushed the development out near Highway 1 and River Street, with the god-awful sign out there.
Oh, yes. But I will say that Kennedy, and I had not seen him speak before since he became mayor, was the real leader in the bunch on this particular issue, and he was able to, even though he disagreed with the conclusions of his council, with the not in my backyard kinds of views, and with the, you know, let's stall this project, let's try to kill it by delaying it, attitudes that many of the other council members had, he brought the group to a consensus. So again, not a consensus that he agreed with, and he refrained from making, you know, endless political and philosophical speeches that didn't have any impact on the outcome, which is what, you know, most of the other council members did. They just talked and talked and talked. And, you know, I have a whole list of quotes here, which I'll post online, but it was horrible. So he restrained himself. And in this case, he was a good leader, and he took the right position. Unfortunately, you know, the rest of, there was only one other person who supported him.
You also mentioned earlier that you have bad news about the Metro Riders situation. You want to talk about that, because I know you've established a website, you've been working on a newsletter, you've been trying to get involved and get the community involved in what, better local bus service?
Yes. Yeah. And Metro is looking at a $1.3 million deficit next year on a budget of about $33 million. And, of course, when you have a deficit of that magnitude, the first thing and really the only thing to go at this point is bus service. And I have news that a bus service cut will be discussed. The first round of bus service cuts for this year will be discussed in April. And there could be more after that, because the budget picture is changing every day. Here's another Rodkin story. I spoke up at the Metro Board meeting last Friday, and I said, why are we robbing, you know, the average Metro rider who may be a retail worker? And I looked at wages for certain categories of workers in this county, and I found that farm workers earn $16,000 a year, assuming that they can work full-time. Of course, no benefits, no other payments associated with that, and it's not full-time work, so it's going to be less. And I found that food prep workers earn $17,000, and I found that cashiers earn $22,000, perhaps, if they're lucky to work full-time. And then I looked at the salary of the wage of a top Metro bus driver, over $50,000 a year, starting in July. And so I said, why are we robbing these riders, the folks who are earning $16,000 a year to provide, in this case, a 9% raise to drivers who are already earning $50,000 a year, have guaranteed full-time employment, have health care, have a number of protections in the workplace. And it was turned back on me by Rotkin, and I was accused of wanting to undermine the working conditions for the Metro drivers. So it was turned back on me. They're completely beholden to labor interests, and they have a very narrow view of who is worthy of receiving financial relief. And I think if we have a choice about who to provide relief to, it's got to be the $16,000 a year folks, not the $50,000 a year folks. I'm trying to stop the raise, but it's very, very tough with that board, because they're completely, completely in bed with the labor group in this case.
I know we invited Bonnie Moore to come on the air with you and respond, and she politely told my producer, oh, maybe somewhere down the line, but have you ever heard from or talked to her at all?
No, Bonnie is ill right now, actually. I heard that she's in the hospital, and she's, you know, of course, everyone's very concerned about her, but I share that concern, but the chance for real dialogue with that group is, I would say, is nil. Based on my experience, I've tried many times, and you know, the response that I get is usually a slanderous letter in the Sentinel, or some kind of off-base comment made at a Metro Board meeting. They tried to stop me from testifying at a Metro Board meeting, and things like that. So it's not a productive dialogue. I should also point out that the union policy, and that applies to both UTU, the drivers, and to SEIU, is that they prefer having raises for their senior employees, even knowing that this will force layoffs among the junior employees. And that's been the effective policy of both of those organizations. So these raises hurt not only the riders and the users of the service, but they also hurt the junior employees.
There's an interesting article on the Indy Media website, which I finally was able to get to, Rally for Loreto Arzepe and all youth in prison. Are you familiar with that situation?
Is that the California Youth Authority situation?
It is.
Uh-huh.
And there's a kind of the brief summary is on March 25th, I'm reading from the Indie Media website, supporters of Loreto Arzepe and all youth in prison rallied in front of the Santa Cruz County Courthouse to send a clear message to Bob Lee, the district attorney for Santa Cruz County. The message is that the California Youth Authority will only make problems worse and that Loreto is ready, willing, and able to make very positive contributions to his community. Bob Lee may well be on his way to pushing Loreto Arzepe deeper into the injustice system by sending Loreto to the California Youth Authority, directly contradicting his public statements. On February 22nd, Lee stated that Santa Cruz County would join the CYA ban and that while there are no local offenders in the pipeline for sentencing, the county is prepared to use other programs and detention facilities to house sentenced offenders until the CYA hearings are completed and recommendations made. That's a quote from Lee, according to this article. Loreto's sentencing was scheduled to take place during the rally, but has been postponed to a later date. And I'm looking at the full article. There's some comments and some interesting photos on the issue. I think I'm going to have trouble when I try to access the full article because it's pretty slow. Well, maybe not. Maybe I'll be able to get through. One thing I noticed was that Scott Kennedy appears in these photos.
I thought so. He was on the left side of one of the pictures.
But I'm not sure what his position is. Whenever I see a public official, yeah, this operation is timing out when I attempt to contact the media, so I can't get through there to the website. But there is a picture of Kennedy doing that, and it interests me because Kennedy has quite a deserved reputation for, to me, selling out on a number of issues, ranging from the sleeping ban to the downtown ordinances to, for me, big developers. For you, it sounds like selling out to West Side Neighbors. Maybe that's the fate of a politician to be called a sellout by one side or the other.
Oh, I'd say in general, the council, not him in this case, but he's acquiescing to the neighbors, to the homeowners.
Well, yeah, and I've also seen him act in a very authoritarian fashion at city council, both in my case and the case of other people, and also maintain a pretty closed process there. I assume the council got 15 times as much time as the public. Maybe not.
Oh, you're right. And then the opponents, the homeowners, also got 6 minutes for their initial speech, which was the first comment, and everyone else got two. And they kept on badgering. They asked for 4 and then 6 minutes. And Kennedy actually opposed that. And the rest of the council, you know, you have Mike Rock can take his mic and all the other people. It's like, oh, let them speak. Yeah. So.
Interesting. Well, you rarely, I mean, that kind of dissension on the council is interesting and unusual. I know in cases of homeless stuff, it never happens. I mean, at least it hasn't happened for years. Kennedy used to be actually on the dissenting voices on the council trying to push for the rights of homeless people, and that was abandoned years ago, over a decade ago. But here he is, apparently standing up, urging Bob Lee to keep his commitments. One wonders if this will, you know, translate into some kind of push to give directives to the Santa Cruz Police Department on this issue. And I may follow up on that myself. We're talking to Paul Marcelin Sampson here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris. This is 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. And we have about 45 minutes left in the show. Anything more, Paul, that you want to...
No, that was all I had. I'm still, I guess, I'm very familiar with the Metro process, and I go to those meetings every 2 weeks, but I'm just getting used to the city process and finding out who potential allies might be. And really the only person I saw at that meeting on Tuesday who might be an ally would be Kennedy, because he had his feet planted on the ground and was thinking realistically about ways of providing housing and was willing to accept the project instead of delaying and redesigning it. So I think he might be an ally on those issues. I don't know. I'm still new to the scene.
Maybe he can get his feet planted on the floor here and get his butt into the radio station and stop missing his appointments. He's scheduled to show 5 times and been frequent on all 5 occasions. So but that was a while ago, and he has come to someone else's show. So we'll see. And he did make a public kind of retraction, sort of apology around the issue of his slanderous statement that I was convicted of a crime. Not that it really means a lot. I mean, I, you know, rough and tumble of politics, you get all kinds of things said. But Kennedy is, I find, so unapproachable on substantive issues. For at least from from people that I know on civil rights, homeless issues, police misconduct, that I just have very little faith in him. And who knows? We probably have a somewhat different position on, maybe we have the same position, I don't know, on affordable housing. But let me know how things go with Kennedy. Maybe you should meet with him. And I apologize for saying that you were a candidate for city council. I don't know.
I thought I was considering it when we talked last. Yeah, and I just, you know, to be honest, my hopes of doing that in Santa Cruz, I think, are dashed, considering who I would have to pander to have a chance of winning, unless we had a district election situation.
Yeah, someone asked me recently to run for city council, and I kind of passed on to him the word that we need to have a whole alternate city structure of reform the city government in order to make some meaningful changes here, and I don't think the council can do it. I think they're too much under the thumb of the staff and the bureaucracy. Hey, thank you, Paul, for calling in. As usual, away we go, and the time is zips away.
So. Thank you, Robert, and great show today.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Laws were made by people, and people can be wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote and children worked the mine. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. A rotten law stays on the books till folks with guts defy it. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. Now the law's supposed to serve us, and so are the police. When that system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace. It takes eternal vigilance for justice to prevail. So get courage from your convictions. Let them haul you off to jail. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom? Or march that picket line. Have you been to jail for justice? Will you go to jail for justice? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine.
Ann Feeney, Have You Been to Jail for Justice, from the album of the same name. So, got a call while we were hearing that song, and here it is. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, this is Tim.
Hey, Tim.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about the medical marijuana thing.
Okay.
I didn't hear all of it, so I was curious about the rally, and I'd like to get the information on that, see if you could announce that again.
What rally is that?
I thought Anina was saying something about having a rally.
Well, that was me. I was trying to get Anita and Andrea, to these two medical marijuana activists, to demand to schedule a meeting with, a public meeting preferably, with Scott Kennedy, the mayor, and or Mike Rotkin, the vice mayor, around the issue of ending the zoning restrictions that have made cannabis clubs impossible in Santa Cruz. And if they don't do it, or maybe even before they do it, just holding a big rally outside the mayor's office. Now, I've been asking them to do this for years, and they have not yet formed together to do it. So there's no rally plan, but you could call Anita at MedX. I think her number is, I think she took it with her. Maybe not. I have it here. No, I think she took it with her. But if you call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and leave a message, I'll get her number for you.
Okay. The other thing was just generally about the whole medical marijuana thing and buyers clubs and all that. And I think it's fair to criticize WHAM and to have a dialogue in terms of like what could be better, and we want to make a better situation for all the medical marijuana patients in this town and throughout the state. But I also feel like, instead of just criticizing WHAM all the time, you should also look at how they have succeeded and why they have succeeded. And I think that one of the main reasons they have succeeded so well in standing up to the federal government is that they're a cooperative, and they give away the marijuana for free. And while I would like to see, clubs proliferating in Santa Cruz, and ultimately I think it should be a white market, and we should have a buyer's club right downtown to compete with all the alcohol and cigarette that people are allowed to push. I think that the real strength with the WHAMs comes from giving it away. And instead of a club, I'd like to see another cooperative in town. And I just wanted to put that out there as an idea. And, just trying to remember that we're all on the same side, really, in a lot of ways. I mean, people can have criticisms about the way certain things are being done, but I think it's better to, realize we're kind of, fighting ultimately all against the federal policies that, is keeping cannabis and hemp from being grown in this country.
Well, I kind of agree with you and I disagree with you both. I mean, I think I more disagree with you than agree with you. I think while it is true we're fighting the federal policies, and there's no question about that, it's also true that some of us are trying to establish local policies that will allow people to... that there are local hurdles that are even worse than the federal hurdles. I mean, the California is trying to stake, its own... It's actually led the nation, I believe, in establishing... And Santa Cruz has led the state in decriminalizing medical marijuana. And there's been some criticism about whether that was a good idea, because it's... The actual rate of arrests of marijuana is going up, not down. So while we're playing these little games with medical marijuana patients, there's a huge industry that is a corrupt and evil industry that's flourishing on people going to jail for ordinary use of marijuana, including medical marijuana, across the country, and including in California. Still, locally in Santa Cruz, the city council has... apparently, to the benefit of one group, WHAM, which can only serves less than 300 people, less than 10% of the total number of people needing medical marijuana, and can't serve other groups, and I agree with you, it would be nice to have a second cooperative, other groups that were serving those people cannot operate because of, A, the city council's zoning regulations of 2000, not the feds, but the zoning regulations of 2000, and B, because Valerie and Mike Corral have essentially colluded with this effort. They are not engaging in any kind of dialogue. They've never come on the air. They never respond to any of these concerns or criticisms. I've addressed them repeatedly. They won't talk about it. They have an exclusionary procedure similar to that of the city council in some ways. They are people in positions of power who do not have to be accountable for what they do. And I think that way it's really misleading and unfortunate to suggest, we should all sort of unite with them against the federal government. I mean, sure. The minute somebody comes and attacks anybody who's a Fed, I'm out there saying, fuck this. But that's not happening most of the time. Most of the time, it is the sheriffs. Most of the time, it is the fact that people are intimidated from doing anything by the city, from proceeding to do the kind of tolerant marijuana practices that were happening in the early, mid, and even the late 90s. That's my feeling about it.
Well, yeah, I don't know if we're ever really going to come up with a solution. I mean, I'm of the opinion that we just need to legalize it across the board.
Damn,
you know,
right.
It should be.
I agree with that.
You know, and I think if you really cornered Mike and Valerie on it, they would probably agree with that too. Although, you know, they'd say politically, it's kind of the same argument with among the hemp activists that went on before 215 got on the ballot, because there was kind of a split between the activists.
I see no reason why the corrals can't support and, in fact, demand that the city support the right of medical marijuana dispensaries. And, of course, I mean, I spent a lot of time bad-mouthing the corrals for not doing this, but I've also got to say that people like Anita Henry and Andrea Tischler and Theodora Carey and Kate Wells have not gotten together as a group, and maybe they've gotten together and they're just tired of looking at each other, or it's just too exhausting to do. They don't want to, you know, they haven't called up Rotkin. They haven't called him on his public commitment to do something in November. They haven't, I mean, they don't, it takes, you know, gadflies like me and a few other people who are, you know, who don't really have the number of people behind them in terms of the organizations, because each of these people, Kate Wells had a cannabis club, Andrea Tischler runs the bed and Bud and Breakfast, Anita Henry is MedX, Theodora Carey is, she's an independent activist in her own right. You know, there's a need to stand up to power here. That's what's going to get things done, I think. And it's really, people are either burned out or they're trying to form their private connections with people, and it's just sort of depressing. And hopefully that's you know, I mean, we saw people talking about changing it on the air today. Anita and Andrea are supposed to meet, and I'd be happy to hear that happen. But I've heard that one before. You know, I want to put what's actually going to come down. Will there be a bunch of people in front of city council offices? You know, that protest that you asked about. You know, it hasn't been formed. I mean, Huff has talked about setting up a table and distributing marijuana downtown. Puff, calling it Huff and Puff, you know. And we actually had a connection up in Mendocino at one point, and we're talking about doing that. The connection has since dried up. But, you know, it's a pressing need for poor people in Santa Cruz to have access to medication and, of course, to be able to not have to go through a fancy doctor's process to get it. Anyway, that's my thought on anything more.
No, not really. Although I do agree with you with the burnout. I mean, there, you know, the activists in this town, it's been a few activists that have done a whole hell of a lot thus far. And, you know, if there's students up at the university who are interested in this issue, I would encourage them to get active in it, because, you know, the medical marijuana movement in this town could use a infusion of new blood.
Yeah. Give a call if you're interested to 423-HUFF. If you want to get involved, I'll pass you on to appropriate groups. Or if you've got Andrea's MedX number, I mean Andrea, Anita's MedX number, boy, 425-3444, I think I'm remembering what it was.
Andrea Tischler would also be a good one to call at the Compassion Flower Inn.
Right.
And their number is 466-0420.
466-0420. And, of course, you can always call Vice Führer Mike Rotkin, and he is at 420-5020, and request that he make good on his public statements, although, as has been mentioned by the prior caller, he's an equivocator, so he'll just probably do some more equivocating with you. But the more pressure, the better.
You know, even with this, the medical marijuana thing with the local politicians, the thing with them is that, you know, I mean, they've been somewhat supportive, but really it's the people that lead, and once the people are doing it, it's, you know, the city council follows.
Local politicians have not been somewhat supportive. They have been quite the opposite, and that's the reason I urge people to do what you're doing, to lead and essentially say, join the parade or get trampled is the deal. Thanks for calling, Tim.
Okay. All good right. show, Robert.
Thanks. And phone lines are open. 427-3772 is the call number if you want to call in. I know there were a caller. I think we're backlogged by calls one or two, so I'm kind of looking at the ringer and seeing if anybody wants to call in. 427-3772. Well, while we're waiting for the next caller, let's have a little street stuff.
It's about 4:15 in front of the Gelato Mania Cafe, which is maniacally taking over the sidewalk with its enclosures. We're talking with...
David.
Dave, you have a... looks like a long alpine hunting horn or something. What is this thing you have here?
It's a didgeridoo.
It is a didgeridoo.
Mm-hmm. And you got that stock from the desert.
And you play this professionally?
I play it because I like it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Professionally, I heal with it.
And you've mentioned to me that you aren't going to be playing on Pacific Avenue. Now, why is that?
And we will find out exactly why he won't be playing on Pacific Avenue in a moment, but we have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hello, this is John Tilking with the Human Rights Organization. Just wanted a couple of quick comments here. One is that I'm a little bit hesitant to come right out and have publication of the decision by Judge Barton when it hasn't been finally published yet in his paperwork. You know, he hasn't published it himself yet. I'm a little hesitant to have people, you know, publishing articles saying that the decision is final or something like that when it's not final.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be a little bit embarrassing if he turns around and changes his mind on Friday, but mm-hmm. you never know what that guy might do. And the other comment I had was, did you hear about President Bush trying to make a joke out of the weapons of mass destruction deal where he was looking around the White House trying to find weapons of mass destruction?
He was a looking here and there and a looking everywhere. Uh-huh. Yeah, he was doing a comic routine.
Right. So I thought it was interesting that he finally picked the right country to look for weapons of mass destruction in. He's actually looking for them in the United States instead of looking for them in Iraq. I thought that was kind of interesting that even though it's a Freudian slip on his part, he's actually looking in the right country for a change.
Well, you would hope that after all these years he would finally pick up on that, yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, those are the two comments I had for now.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
Sure. Bye.
And now back to Didgeridoo Dave.
Because the police like to harass didgeridoo players or drummers just because it shows too much freedom and too much, it's, I don't know, too meditative, too trance-inducing.
Kind of a low kind of sound, right?
Uh-huh.
I actually heard a didgeridoo player about 6 or 8 months ago up at Cathcart and Pacific, and I guess he was there for a time, but you've had bad experiences.
Yeah, I used to live here, and I've actually got tickets for playing didgeridoo on Pacific Avenue. They just seemed to want to get me off the avenue playing didgeridoo, so I usually end up not staying here too long.
But you're back.
Yeah.
Is it because of the sunny weather?
Yeah, I'm coming back from the gym fair, and then I'm going to... hopefully work my way over to the big island of Hawaii to where it's tropic and I feel like I fit in and they really accept my didgeridoo playing there. I think it would be a big thing for their community, even though I know it's a good thing for this community. And, So I guess I'll play if you want me to walk down the street, like if I could walk down the street anywhere else.
I'd be happy to do that. We'll get a little didgeridoo playing for the folks.
This is not didgeridoo playing, but stay tuned.
music of John Ward. And now a little didgeridooing. Listening to the didgeridoo playing out.
David.
Thank you, David.
Now, a week ago was a demonstration in San Francisco. Tens of thousands of people attended it, and I was there, as was my producer, Becky Johnson, puffing and huffing and keeping up with me. We did some tape recording up there, and here's a little bit of that.
George Bush here, who is actually right next to the dead dolls. And
this is the Wheel of Fortune.
You have a Wheel of Fortune with the names of different countries,
yeah,
Canada, China.
The countries that we're going to be bringing the American way to next.
I see. Now, so what is going to be the next target? It's going to be kind of a potluck.
You know, we're just going to be spinning it throughout the day here, and whichever country comes up the most, we'll do that. You know, it could be France.
Could be Venezuela.
Could be Brazil.
Could be Chad.
Could be...
Is this your car here?
Man.
Are you a presidential vehicle? I see you're sort of a...
Yeah, that's one of my vehicles.
Oh, wait a minute. There's an imposter. Another George... There are George Bushes everywhere. I'm going to have to check this out. Thank you, Your Excellency.
You're welcome.
Yeah. What's your name, sir?
Jimmy Walter. J-I-M-M-Y-W-A-L-T-E-R.
And Jimmy, you have on a Bush AWL Chicken Hawk, and you're in what kind of a vehicle here?
This is a 1937 Rolls-Royce Phantom 3 body by Barker open touring car.
And the wheel is on the right side as in England.
Actually, it was made for India, from the Maharaja Rajadam II of Kolhapur.
And how did you get a hold of it?
I was at the art show in New York City when I was looking on the internet because I've been looking for a car, and the United States Treasury was having an auction in Edison, New Jersey. They had confiscated this and four others from a New York banker who was laundering money for the Russian mafia, and I went to the auction and bought the car.
What did it cost you?
I won the bid at $125,000, but the Treasury had it appraised at $225,000, and I split the difference with them for $175,000. But a brand new Rolls-Royce Corniche is $350,000. They only made five of this car.
And you brought the car to the protest to emphasize your solidarity with AWOL presidents everywhere?
To lampoon the man who says character counts and doesn't have one bit of it.
Now, who did you vote for in the last election?
Nader.
Hey.
I regret it, but you know, what can you say?
Hey, thank you very much. And again, we've been talking with...
Jimmy Walter, Walden3.org. W-A-L-D-E-N, the number 3.org.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Have a good day.
All right. So, Becky, you also noticed something else about Jimmy?
Well, he was dressed in a George W. Bush flight suit and helmet, and it was a spitting image of our president. That's why I mistook him earlier.
Well, you know, it could be George is here somewhere keeping an eye on the protesters. There's certainly a helicopter hovering close overhead.
I'm looking for him because I want to tell him to stop.
You're here. We're talking with...
Tim Mashock.
Tim, you are, of course, with the Coalition on Homelessness here at the table. You're gathering signatures for annulment of 647J illegal lodging, asking that both the District Attorney Kamala Harris and Supervisor Gonzalez take some action. Hey,
Robert.
Good to see you. What kind of action are you suggesting they take?
Well, what we're hoping is that they'll realize that the enforcement of 647J is not good for the city as well as the people who are targeted by it. The simple fact of the matter is, 647J is a misdemeanor where one could spend up to 6 months in jail for, which is also a jury trial. And the cost of such a prosecution and being put in jail is significantly more than setting up the person in a residential hotel room or even some better housing than that.
There's a residential hotel shortage, don't you understand? And the jails are expanding even as we speak.
Well, which leads to a fundamental problem that the city and the state way too often during the past 10 or 20 years have been focusing on building jails and not housing. And so now, unfortunately, the only housing surplus there is in the jails.
May I get a statement from you?
So let me ask you this. How many people in the last year that you know of have been prosecuted for 647J in San Francisco?
It's an offense which the police only recently have started ticketing people for. Again, they stopped it for many years because of the fact that it's a misdemeanor and that a person who was prosecuted for it would get a public defender. So in the past, they focused on infractions where a person will go to court and not be entitled to an attorney. So this is the 647J enforcement. It's starting slow but steady. We know of four people just in the last couple of months that I'm aware of that have been cited for it. Two of them were found guilty. Though I don't know what their...
Is there a jury trial?
I'm not sure. But I just do know it was four that were actually charged with it, and two were found guilty. And they are looking to expand the citing of people for 647J.
I know that police have been, under Brown, they went after people in parks sleeping at an increased rate, ironically, from what they were doing under Jordan, who Brown replaced. Now we have Gruesome Newsom. What's the situation in terms of the police enforcement of anti-homeless laws now?
From what I've seen and heard, the police have not, while the escalation has been consistent over the years, they haven't really upped it from when Mayor Brown left office. What I believe they're doing is they're waiting for the implementation of Proposition M, which is the newest anti panhandling law that was passed in the city by the voters last November.
Asking for spare change on medians? Or?
It targets everywhere. The scariest part about it for me is the little ATM aspect of it. When they passed an ATM law back in 93, you didn't have that many around. But now with this law, one can't panhandle within 20 feet of an ATM machine. And with ATMs being in every business on a strip, it could be interpreted for enforcement that basically you can't panhandle anywhere in a business district.
Come to Santa Cruz, it's illegal to panhandle within 50 feet of an ATM machine, and you can't sit within 50 feet of an ATM machine.
Santa Cruz blows my mind in some ways. They actually, while it's bad everywhere, it's definitely a little worse there, I think, for homeless people than here, though it's bad everywhere.
What about the new district attorney? Is she better or worse than the old one in terms of her recent performance?
I've spoken to people who have met with her about how she's going to prosecute what they call quality of life citations and the 647J. And while she has been somewhat communicative, she hasn't agreed to any of our hopes. She certainly has not come out saying she's not going to pursue the 647J, and I don't see her being more liberal than Terrence Hallinan. I see her being worse than he was.
Did Hallinan, in fact, pursue any 647J prosecutions?
Not that I'm aware of. There might have been a couple, but during Hallinan's reign, 647J, it wasn't so much Hallinan, but the police department, they stayed away giving out the 647Js for a number of years. It's more of a movement of the police department than the DA.
I've been a long time in jail myself.
Your name is?
John Quinn. Once they built the new jail, they add a second, what they call holding tank. Usually, say you get, even for a felony,